This is Chris Collinsworth. Be sure to check out the PFF NFL podcast as our experts provide insight on all the league's top stories. Every game, every player, every play. Download and subscribe on iTunes or your favorite provider.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back into the Fantasy Slant, brought to you by Pro Football Focus. Guys, I am filling in for Moore tonight. I'm not nearly as funny as Moore. Moore is, I think he's one of the funniest people that I know. Like, he's one of those guys with his quips. Like, he's always got something in his back pocket waiting to give you. But I'm joined by the usual co-hosts here. We have Brandon Marianne Lee and Dan Schneier. What's going on, guys? I mean, I wish that I could say that it's been a more newsworthy week. It seems like there's been nothing on TV. No, nothing big going on. This conversation has got off to a fantastic start.
I mean, I don't know. At this point, I don't know what to say about that.
Oh, no. No, it is what it is. You know,
There's nothing to say. It just has absorbed everything on the planet.
It really did.
I kind of took the day off of Twitter.
I am actually right there with you.
That was a good move.
Yes. I just logged on to basically just check my messages. And it was something.
I'll answer your questions tomorrow. Sorry. I love you. Bye-bye.
Yes, it was ugly. It was ugly last night, and I just didn't want to take part in it. So, exactly. But we're back here. We're here to talk football. We're not going to talk about anything else outside of Moore not being here, me filling in. But guys, as they usually do on the show here, we're going to talk about some news and notes that have kind of taken place. There's some big news that kind of took place this week. And then we're going to go into some DFS plays after the break. So if you're here for the DFS show, second half of the show, we're going to talk about some news and notes now. Brandon, let's start right with Dallas. The big news out of the day, and I think we all saw this coming. I think we all saw it. Dak has been named the starter. Now Tony Romo appears to be cleared, and now it's basically a coaching decision. What's your take on what to do with Dak Prescott going forward? If someone out there owns him, what do you suggest they do with him?
Hold on until Jerry Jones becomes the most hated man in fantasy football.
What do you say, Dan?
I mean, I don't know. Okay, so we obviously look at Dak's stat line against the Browns. I mean, you could put anybody against the Browns. We've talked about this plenty of times on the show. It's like the easiest stack in daily fantasy to just stack against the Browns. But has Dak really been that amazing outside of a few games against really good matchups? I mean, obviously he had good numbers against the Eagles. A lot of that was based on just the extra snaps and everything that went into just an overtime game. But to me, I don't really see him going forward as kind of like that obvious QB play every week that's kind of matchup independent. So I think if you can get something out of him, and I think a lot of the time with Cowboys players and with some of these other teams, the Steelers, you kind of have a little bit of extra, and people have a little extra incentive to trade for them because you might be in a league with a Steeler fan or a Cowboy fan or someone who just kind of inflates their value. So to me, I'm actually not going to hold, just because I think it just kind of just goes back to my whole thoughts on the QB position in general. I don't know. Where do you see it, Mike?
I think that an argument can be made for both sides. Now, Dak Prescott, his floor is ridiculously high.
18 or more DraftKings points every single week except for week one.
Exactly.
Literally.
Exactly. His first week in the NFL, he was on the road. It was a division game. There was just so much built into that game. But ever since then, he's been a cash game option every single week. So for me, I actually like Dak. Now, the thing is, I could see why he'd be a sell, just because you always have that concern in the back of your mind if he struggles one week that he can get benched for Tony Romo. So that's, I think, that side of the argument. But right now, Dak Prescott could even be in the conversation for MVP. After the first 3 weeks, he threw just one touchdown the first 3 weeks. But since then, he's thrown 11 touchdowns in the last five games. Like, he's doing well. He did this all basically without Dez Bryant. He did it with a 40-year-old Jason Witten. Cole Beasley is his number one wide receiver. So he's managed the games extremely well. Obviously, him and Ezekiel Elliott, two rookies in the backfield. It's impressive.
Brandon, don't you dare speak poorly of Cole Beasley. You know me.
I love Cole Beasley. Don't get me wrong.
I have the Beasles. You can't find a cure.
He's not a number one. We know that.
No, but he is in my heart. And I will say that the most impressive stat for me for Dak Prescott is his 0.59 points per opportunity is third in the league, only behind Matt Ryan and Tom Brady in terms of fantasy production. So I just think that he has some staying power. Again, could Jerry Jones ruin it for all of us? Yeah. Yes. I don't know what else to say about that, but it would be stupid. I don't know why they pull him.
Yeah, but if you're a quarterback streamer, there's no reason to get rid of Dak right now. One stat, it's funny you mentioned that, the points per opportunity. One stat I found earlier today when looking at PFF stats is, it's totally off topic, but I really wanted to say this one. Cody Kessler, did you guys know that on aim throws, he's completing 75.5% of his passes? That's second in the league behind only Tom Brady.
But what's his
A-dot? He only has one interception?
But what's his A-dot?
Well, his A dot is lower, but still, that, I mean, 75.1
yards per.
It is not that. Like, I think Aaron Rodgers might be.
He's in the Chad Pennington zone, I think.
Oh, God. I haven't heard Chad Pennington's name in a long time. I know Mike Clay is a big time lover of Chad Pennington. but I think we've talked enough about Cody Kessler for the show. Let's talk about Spencer Ware next. This is news that broke today that he's been cleared from his concussion. He's going to be the lead guy in the backfield again, I would presume. Dan, what's your take on Spencer Ware, Charcandrick West going forward now that we know Jamaal Charles is no longer part of the picture? Do you view Spencer Ware as an RB1 going forward?
Yeah, I do. And we've actually talked about this a bunch on this specific show, because I think you just got to look at Andy Reid's history of kind of leaning on that RB1, leaning on that one workhorse back. This dates back to his days in Philadelphia. And I mean, last week, I say a prayer for all the people burned in DFS in their cash game lineups by Charcandrick West, supposed to be the chalkiest play of the week. And somebody else pointed this out on another podcast. I can't remember who, but it was a great point prior to last week. There was a situation that set up similarly the year before in 2015 where Charcandrick had like a exact same situation. He was the exact same type of chalk play in DFS, and he had a similar type, you know, single digit point week. So I think West is just not the same kind of talent as Ware. He's really good after contact. That's what he's always kind of been in, like our top five, top 10 on a per touch basis in yards after contact. So those are the type of runners that I like to invest in, the guys who really do well in that elusive rating statistic. We talk about that a lot too on the show, and he's one of those guys. So I think it's his backfield going forward.
Brandon, what do you say on, you know what, instead of answering that, because I think we'll probably be on the same page for that, but what's your take on him this week in particular? They're playing at Carolina. Carolina, it's a ridiculous stat, but I'm going to do it. There hasn't been a single running back that has topped 4.3 yards per carry against them since week one. Like, no, not even a backup. Like, not even somebody that just got two carries for 10 yards. That didn't happen. Like, they held David Johnson to just 24 yards on 10 carries a couple weeks ago. Like, are you excited to start Spencer Ware even though he is back?
What I didn't love about the Charcandrick West play last week wasn't necessarily that it was the wrong call, is that they didn't utilize him as much. You know, normally he needs to get more like 18 to 25 carries to be productive. And I think he got 16 total touches. Yep. And so that doesn't translate well for him. He's someone who has to get into a rhythm. That just never really happened. Again, they had Nick Foles. It was a weird game. I think that had it been Alex Smith at a little bit tighter of a game, perhaps he could have gotten a little bit more into the groove. So it looks like Alex Smith is going to be back. It looks like Spencer Ware is going to be back. So, I'm not going to say he's going to defy all odds. I don't know if he'll have a great yards per carry per se, but I do think that he has a good touchdown in him. And if he gets the usage, it just became clear to me that they didn't trust Charcandrick West in the way they trusted Spencer Ware, and his usage is much higher. So that would be the I guess, terrible answer that I'm giving, which is if they give him the usage, yes. If they don't, then I'm worried, but I don't know why they wouldn't at this point. Well, because concussions aren't exactly like a hamstring. You know, I'm worried about Doug Martin getting a full workload, but I'm not really worried about that with Spencer Ware personally.
The fun fact I found on that is between Charcandrick West and Spencer Ware, of them two, if they didn't get 18 touches in a game this year, neither of them scored. So they need to get 18 touches. This week, I think Spencer Ware needs to be more involved in the passing game. He's ever since week one where he caught 7 passes, you know, like Spencer Ware came out, he worked on passing all season. He hasn't recorded more than 2 catches over the last, you know, 6 games that he's played. So I think they need to get him more involved in the passing game. And that might happen with Jeremy Maclin looking likely to be missing this game.
They also need to get him in the end zone. He's only had 3 touchdowns all season total, 1 passing, 2 running.
And that's what I'm saying. And it's basically been in games where he's had more than 18 touches. So we need him to do that. I just don't think it happens at Carolina. That's why I have Spencer Ware in my fades of the week, in my DFS article coming out. Actually came out earlier today. But let's talk about the next subject. Dan, I want to talk to you about the Seattle running back situation. You know, at the start of the year, we didn't really know what to expect out of Thomas Rawls. He came in, he was out. Kristen Michael, he's the next big thing. Even when Thomas Rawls comes back, People think that he's the guy. And now we add CJ Procise into the mix, and he seems to be getting a lot of touches. Pete Carroll saying that he's going to be more involved this week. I tend to think it's going to be more out of necessity this week because they're playing the Patriots. But do you think that, you know, CJ Procise is practically a flex starter going forward?
Well, here's the interesting thing about Procise, about kind of what you said. You think it's going to be out of necessity because they're playing the Patriots. Last week, it wasn't really game flow dependent with Procise. He had more snaps than Michael, and they were ahead for most of that game, obviously after the first drive or so. But so, I mean, I think that it may just be the type of thing where Christian Michael really hasn't been good this year. Like, he had that amazing preseason. He has scored a couple touchdowns for them. I mean, a few touchdowns for them, obviously. And that's kind of inflated his fantasy points. But on a per-carry basis, he hasn't been that great. And it's really tough for me to get super excited about a running back behind that offensive line. I mean, you watch them block, and it's just like it's mayhem every single play there. It seems like guys are getting thrown back into the backfield. They have our worst-ranked run blocking unit in the entire league, and that's obvious. I mean, if you just watch them play. So for me, I'm not going to get too excited. But I do think that the Christine Michael era is officially over. I really do. I think once Rawls gets back to the mix, he runs a different style for them. Like, just watching them, just as kind of, I know people don't love when you go off the script with the statistics and everything and just go by what you see. But from what I see, I think Michael runs behind that line, behind their specific blocking scheme in a lot different way than we saw Rawls do it. And same thing with Lynch. So I think Rawls will get back into the mix, and I think Procise will be definitely a big part of it. Remember, they drafted him in the third round before a lot of other backs. And there was a lot of hype for him in the preseason. People were calling him David Johnson 2.0. He has that size speed combination. So, you know, he's healthy now, and I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I felt like he could have a flex value in PPR leagues. And with Christian Michael, 5 carries. I think part of it, though, I think Pete Carroll somewhat benched Christian Michael. I don't know if he talked about it. I didn't catch his post game or anything like that. But Christian Michael kind of showboated on his touchdown before he got in the end zone, almost like held out the ball like, what are you doing? You haven't played very well the last 5 weeks. He hadn't topped 4 yards per carry in his last 5 games. I think that the motivation is almost worn off. Like, you don't see him running the way he did in the preseason, the way he did at the start of the season. So, Brandon, you were shaking your head. I think you agree with us.
Yeah, I mean, this is a story we keep hearing over and over, right? Christian Michael, preseason, way to go. Everybody gets really excited because of his talent. I just hate the talent argument. They're all talented. They're in the National Football League. I want to see how they play in games, in pads, get it together. There's nothing worse than the t-shirt and shorts talent that we all get excited about in the OTAs. That drives me absolutely bonkers, Nelson Aguilar. But I will say, though, I just want to be clear. Thomas Rawls is practicing finally. They have announced that he's not going to play against New England, but they are looking for him to get involved the week after that. I completely agree with Dan. I think this is Thomas Rawls' job. I actually don't think it's going to be CJ Procise. The guy has only had 9 carries for 30 rushing yards and 8 catches for 116 receiving yards. Now, the 8 catches for 116 receiving yards, you're like, yay, but no touchdowns. Yeah, sure. Okay, he played in 26 of the 47 team snaps, which was a high for him at 55.3%. Before that, 25 and 41%. It's going in the right direction. But I still don't think they view him as a lead back. I think that they wanted to experiment a little bit with having a lead back and a pass catching back. But they didn't get Thomas Rawls healthy. It just didn't work out. And CJ Procise, if you remember, wasn't healthy in the preseason, so they couldn't incorporate him into the game plan at the beginning of the season. So things are kind of starting to come around, and it looks like perhaps Russell Wilson could get a little bit healthier and or more efficient towards the end of the season, which seems to be his thing. But again, that offensive line, I agree with Dan. You just can't get that excited, but I just think it's too small of a sample size, maybe this week, but I don't know. I still think it's a bad matchup. It's still not someone that I want to play him against.
A lot of Precise's receiving yards, you mentioned his total, but a lot of his yards came on that Tanner McAvoy trick play where there was just like kind of a reverse pass. And that was like, at least, I think it was like a 47-yard play. So, I mean, at that point, we're looking, if you take that away, obviously you shouldn't, but it's a trick play. They're not going to use that every week. We're looking at somebody who's really just hasn't produced.
Yeah.
And no offense to him, I'm sure he can, but that's not how they play football right now.
And it's going to turn into an ugly timeshare. I don't think they're going to totally go away from Christian Michael, but I do know that CJ Procise was brought in there for a reason. He's kind of like taking on that Fred Jackson role from last year. Rawls coming back. We just don't know. There's so many question marks for me. I want no part of the backfield if I can help it. But let's move on. Let's talk about someone else returning. It seems like all these running backs are starting to come back into action. Another one Jaquizz Rodgers has been ruled out, but it seems like Doug Martin's on track to play. In his absence, it's been crazy. Ever since him and Sims have gone down, the Bucs have totaled 113 carries and 20 receptions, the running backs have, in the last four games. They're averaging 33 touches per game. So Doug Martin immediately enters back into the RB1 conversation, right, Brandon?
No, because they're not going to give him that many carries on a hamstring injury. He's been out too long to give him that many carries on the first week back with a hamstring injury, don't you think? I mean, that just seems like coaching 101 to me. I think he's a running back one the second week he's back, maybe, or once they realize that. I still think that they're going to ease him in just a hint. I don't think he's going to get 33 carries. That's all I'm saying. I would probably still play him as an RB1 this week. That's fine. But I mean, I don't think we can think that he's going to get that kind of volume. Jaquizz, they were going to give him that volume because they needed the yards and they didn't care. You know, Doug Martin, they signed to a contract. They don't want to hurt him again. I just think that this is going to be a little bit different than what we've seen recently. And maybe I'm alone on that. I'm just using injury logic here. But you're right. Absolutely. Jaquizz was a beast. He was a fantasy goldmine for those of us that picked him up and plugged him in because we were desperate. So I know I have Jaquizz and Doug Martin in the league. I will plug in Doug Martin happily, but I'm not expecting 33 carries for him in this game.
I wouldn't expect 33 carries like right out of the gate, but I think, I don't know if it would be realistic. Dan, what do you think? Do you think that Doug Martin could come out and get 16 touches in his first game? Because they have been taking it slow with him. You know, that they pulled him back after he re-aggravated it. I mean, mm-hmm. It's tough to say that you don't want to play. So in a redraft league, I think you have to play Doug Martin, right?
Sure.
I think 100% in a redraft league, you're playing him. And I actually, for me, he's in play in tournaments for Daily Fantasy. I would never play him in cash, but he's in play for tournaments just because of what you were talking about. I mean, I think this offense, the way it works with Dirk Cutter and that, I think he realizes that, you know what, Jameis is not all totally there yet in his second year. He's throwing a lot of passes high. He's off on a lot of throws. Like, you watch those games, and Evans is open a lot, and he'll wildly overthrow. And the easiest way to help a young quarterback trying to get his groove and trying to really establish himself is with a running game. And I think that's what we saw with Jaquizz Rodgers, like you talked about all those touches. And like you said, you mentioned this a few seconds ago, even before this week when now he is practicing, Cutter said, like, oh, yeah, he's not going to go this week, but you know what? We're expecting him back for week 10. And then everything's kind of played in that favor, trying to work in the action. Okay, now he's practicing. Everything's on track, on schedule. So you know what? For me, definitely redraft. You have to play him. And then I may have him in a couple tournaments just because I think there's so much upside based on what you talked about with just, like, the fact that you're just buying the potential for so many touches there.
I love
it. If everything goes right.
And 16 touches is very different than 33.
Oh, well, that's yeah. But I mean, 16 is still, like, if I was guaranteed 16 touches out of Doug Martin this week, I'd play him in cash.
For sure. Well, that's the thing. But then you get the chance of the Jeremy Maclin situation where he comes back, he re-aggravates, and you get your big zero. And that's why I don't play him in cash.
Exactly. That's why you wouldn't play him in cash. That's what I'm saying. If I was guaranteed it, okay, I would do it.
Yeah, well, of course. But, yeah.
You know what's crazy? I was going through numbers today, and I looked at Jameis Winston. Do you guys know that if you remove the two games against Arizona and Denver that he played, he's thrown 16 touchdowns in six games and just three interceptions?
Wow.
I don't think people realize, like,
he's very good.
Yeah, considering the lack of options he has, like, Mike Evans is, like, all he's got. And Mike Evans
is... I didn't need to blame that on him just per se. I think he's a young quarterback. Occasionally, and they just want to take some pressure off of him.
Oh, yeah.
But the problem is Mike Evans has less than 2 yards after the catch.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He's giving him zero. I mean, it's all Jameis's own yards. It's unbelievable. It's the opposite of Matthew Stafford, where it's all after the catch. It's unbelievable what they're doing on the opposite side of that. Mike Evans is like, oh, caught the ball. I'm going to sit down.
And to be fair, he's like 5 yards tall. So if he just falls.
It's still effective. Hey, I'm playing Mike Evans everywhere on the planet. Don't get me wrong, but he definitely is not running after the catch. Let's just put that nicely.
Absolutely. No. So moving on from that, let's talk about some more news that came out. So Jarvis Landry has been in like a target funk over the last 3 weeks that they've played, and it coincides with Jay Ajayi's emergence. What is your guys' take going forward on Landry? Because not only has Adam Gase come out, but Christensen, the offensive coordinator, he came forward and said, yes, Gase is right. We need to give him the ball more. That's on me. Is this smoke, or do you guys really believe that they're going to force feed Jarvis Landry the ball? Dan, what do you think?
I think it could be a squeaky wheel situation here where he does get the ball a little more often. But you made a good point. I mean, there's, and this is kind of on the opposite side of what I just said, because last week they didn't get that running game going early with J.H.I. And you know what? They stuck with it. And after the game, Gase said point blank, like, I know I have to stick with this run game, even if it's not working. This basically confirmed my thought going into the game that even if it doesn't work at first, I got to stick with it because eventually it's going to work and it's going to help us win this game. And now they're on this winning streak and he doesn't seem like he's going to go away from it. So is there a way, do we see a way for both Ajayi and Landry to be two, you know, high or at least consistently scoring players on a weekly basis? That's the question we have to ask ourselves. And I don't know if the answer is yes for two Dolphins every week. They don't play at that fast of a pace. Their defense is on the field a lot. It's a tricky situation. So it's a matter of if you want to go with the squeaky wheel coach speak, which can be great, and it can let you down too. And it's just, I'm kind of in the middle on this one. I don't have a strong take.
Brandon, let's hear what you have to say. Do you think that Jarvis Landry is considered, should you consider him a buy low? I think that's the best question.
No. I think this is an indictment on Ryan Tannehill.
I was about to say, we know you love Ryan.
Yeah. No, but I mean, no, but honestly, I'm just going to say since week four, he has only had 30 attempts or more once. That's it. If he's only making 20 some pass attempts, there are only so many targets that can go towards Jarvis Landry, regardless of whatever we're talking about. So I just think that Adam Gase is kind of like what we were talking about with establishing the run for Tampa Bay. They're establishing the run so that Ryan Tannehill doesn't completely implode and that they could win some games. And you know what? They've won three in a row. Right. I don't think they're going to make a huge playoff push anytime soon, but certainly it's working for them. That's not an accident. So it makes zero sense for them to all of a sudden start force feeding the ball to Jarvis Landry. Now, Jarvis Landry is an incredibly talented receiver, one of the best in the league at what he does. Actually, when you look at like what, you know, what he did last season, what he's able to do when Ryan Tannehill actually can throw a ball that's like manageable and you can catch, but they're just not letting Ryan Tannehill air it out at all. They're completely changed their game plan. Adam Gase has said, great, there's someone who can get me some yards. And they're only using Tannehill when they think it's going to be an easy gain. And I think that's smart football. I don't think it's smart for fantasy owners, but I think that's smart football for the Miami Dolphins.
It really is. It's smart to take the ball out of Ryan Tannehill's hands as much as possible. I would agree with you. I don't think that Landry is going to ever be the guy that he was even last year. You know, the guy that's catching 7-8 yards, seven, eight catches per game. You could almost rely on him as a cash game option every single week, no matter the opponent, because he's like that shifty athlete. He's only being targeted 5 yards from the line of scrimmage. There was a lot of reasons to like Jarvis Landry. Now that they actually have a run game, it kind of takes away some of his luster. The reason I felt like there would have been some upside this week and going forward was with the retirement of Arian Foster. I felt like that would have opened up a couple targets for Landry underneath. Like, because when Foster was brought in, I felt like that would eat into his production. It didn't really affect it that much because, let's be honest, the last 3 weeks where he's kind of been sluggish, Arian Foster's been nowhere to be found. So that's where I do have my concerns about Landry. I think there's somewhere I think there's a middle ground. I don't think that he's a bad option. I think that's why Dan was saying he has really no strong take on it, because there's really no way to go. Like, I think it's just somewhere in between. I don't think that he's, you know, that wide receiver, top end wide receiver two in PPR, but I also don't think that he's I don't think he's bench material. So the last piece of news I want to touch on, and it's not really news, it's more of an opinion. I came up with this one. I wanted to hear your guys' take. Brandon, we talked a little bit about it on the Waiver Wire show. So I want to ask Dan about it. Dan, what's your take on the Baltimore running back situation? You know, this week they play on Thursday night. They have a fantastic matchup against the Browns. It could potentially be a game where they say, we're going to decide our running back this week. Do you think that Kenneth Dixon gets a shot, like more of an opportunity than Terrence West this week?
So Dixon's a guy I was super high on in the draft. This is not just from what I've seen of his at Louisiana Tech. I mean, even if you look at just the numbers, as far as Pro Football Focus did their job on him, he was up there in elusive rating, in yards after contact, in forced missed tackles. He was one of the best receiving backs in college football last year. This is a guy who did it all. And I think that the injury, his obviously, he missed, how many weeks did he miss? 4 or 6 weeks at the beginning of the season with that knee injury. So I think the injury is still kind of having an effect on him from what I've seen since he's returned. But at the same time, you look at Terrence West, and he's been unbelievably inefficient over the past 4 weeks. I looked at it, and he actually has the 33rd of 39 running backs in elusive rating over the past 4 weeks. I I talked about him as somebody you should really sell in my buy sell column, somebody you should sell because for that exact reason. And now you're looking at it and they're starting to creep up. They're starting to give more snaps to Dixon, like you just mentioned. So I think, you know, if he is over that injury, we're going to see it and it's going to be boom. We see it right then and there, just one or two runs, and it might be too late at that point. So I think you kind of got to read the tea leaves here and see that they're kind of not happy with the production West has given them the past four games. And it's kind of one of those situations where you want to buy before it's a little bit of a risk, but you want to buy before it becomes too late.
You and I are in sync on this one. A couple weeks ago before they played the Jets, I said that Terrence West was a sell high for me. I feel like they want Kenneth Dixon to win this job. And I'm right. I actually have my notes right there. Terrence West has broken four tackles on his last 120, his last 46 carries. Like, he's not getting it done. This past week, I know that the stat sheet doesn't show great numbers for Kenneth Dixon, but he broke three tackles on nine carries. So he's breaking tackles. He runs angry. Like, let's just be honest here. He's a more physically gifted player than Terrence West. Terrence 100%. West, he's been on three teams the last 3 years for a reason. Has he played well for a guy that's come off the street? Yeah. But at the same time, Harbaugh wants a workhorse. He doesn't want to split this backfield. There's a reason he cut Forsett. I just believe that this is the week. And if you're looking for a crazy off-the-wall tournament option, I think you could maybe throw Dixon in there just to get some small exposure. His cost is nothing. And he was actually in my fantasy stock market this week as a buy. So I'm right there with you. I think you should buy before the storm.
And my DFS Bargains article.
There we go. All three of us are writing about this.
Look at that. Look at that. Well, he's at the running back minimum on Yahoo for people that are playing DFS on Yahoo. He's 41st on DraftKings and 57th at 4,600 on FanDuel. That's pretty crazy when you consider that he's going up against the Browns. This would be the perfect week for them to put him out there, get him a lot more work because it could build his confidence, yes. Right? I mean, yes. This is where he can get more yards and a touchdown and get used to that pace of the game without it being so intimidating. You know, sometimes that's the whole thing, right? Is that he doesn't seem intimidated. So I'm not quite sure why they're pausing, but maybe that's it. So this just seems like the perfect matchup. After that, they're at Dallas and Cincinnati, but then it's Miami at New England. They're going to need to really use this week to get him involved if that's what they want, because then the schedule gets a little hazy. So
it does.
I'm hoping.
Yeah, no. That I so that the trifecta, you got it. Don't play Kenneth Dixon in cash. Don't do that. Don't be that guy. Mm-hmm. But I think he's a tournament option. I think he's got upside. If he gets 15 touches against the Browns, he can make it happen. And it almost minimum cost. So I'm glad that we're all in sync on that one. But before we move on to our DFS plays, let's get a word from our sponsors.
This is Chris Collinsworth. Be sure to check out the PFF College Podcast as our experts provide insight on all the league's top stories. Every game, every player, every play. Download and subscribe on iTunes or your favorite provider.
All right, guys. So the second half of the show, we're going to talk about some DFS plays as they do every single week here. So I'm not even going to steal this from them. I'm going to go to Brandon first. Brandon, let's talk about a quarterback. Give me a quarterback that you like in DFS and one that you don't this week.
I like Marcus Mariota versus Green Bay.
And he's so cheap. I don't even know what happened with their algorithm this week. I don't know why.
I know. I said the same thing. He's in my, again, I just kind of plagiarized myself with my DFS bargains article because, you know, I was so tired this morning after all this, you know, election stuff going until 2 a.m. that I'm not quite sure I made sentences, you know, so that was kind of where all my brain power went. So, listen, he's 14th on FanDuel, 16th on DraftKings. Mariota is continuing his success this season. I wrote an entire article too about kind of the guys that are legitimately going to continue still being stars, like Jay Ajayi, Marcus Mariota. I talk about CJ Fedorowicz. These guys are not going anywhere. Michael Thomas. I keep getting questions about trading these guys away or playing them or not playing them. I think people are still not sold on him, and I understand that. The most impressive thing that he's done, though, as far as I'm concerned, is that he had a league low last year of only completing 20.4% of his passes that went for 20 or more yards. So far this season, he's at 42.4%, which is 12th in the league. That's actually quite an improvement, to be entirely frank. And that's on a team that still relies on the run.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that they did the perfect thing. Again, we're talking about these quarterbacks that are trying to build their confidence. They're trying to improve. And so what does the team do? They lean on the run. That's called good coaching. That's what they're doing. And Marcus Mariota's making the most of it. And I like the matchup versus Green Bay. They're at home. I just think this is the right time to play him.
Yeah, no, that's the thing with me is I'm right there with you. He's in my locks article. He's in my locks of the week. And like what I do in that article is I try and find the player that at each position who I like for as cheap as I can get, while considering them a lock for production. And Mariota's in there. He's the number one fantasy wide receiver or fantasy quarterback over the last 5 weeks.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. He's actually 10 points higher than the next closest guy, the guy on the other sideline this week, and that's Aaron Rodgers. He's 10 points more than him over the past five games. So when you look at everything and add it up, like the Packers have allowed more than 30 or more points in games, three of the last four. The only team who didn't score at least 30 points was the Bears. And in the Bears game, if you guys recall, Matt Barkley was the quarterback for three quarters, so they're not going to allow 30 points to Matt Barkley. I don't know where they screwed up with Mariota. Give us one real quick before we move to Dan. What's a quarterback that you don't like in DFS this week? Brandon?
Oh, for me?
Yeah, just one you don't like.
Oh, one that I don't like.
I'll let you think about it.
Please do.
Dan, go ahead and give me a quarterback that you like and one that you dislike.
Well, I want to make one thing clear first. I'm not going to go into it because you guys illustrated perfectly, but you can't fade Mariota this week. The value is just way off and you have to get in on it. That's obvious. But one guy that I love this week, and it might be a little controversial, is Jay Cutler at 5,300 on DraftKings. I think I've been making so much money this season targeting this Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense because no one talks about them as that every week obvious target. People talk about the Saints. People talk about some people talk about the Jets, at least in tournaments. There's a lot of defenses that people like to target. And San Francisco, of course, but it doesn't seem like Tampa Bay is like that lock defense to target. But they are. They have our 24th best pass rush overall, our 25th best pass coverage team overall. And one of the things I love to look for when targeting cheap bargain quarterbacks is the matchup between the team's pass blocking on their offensive line and the opposite team's pass rush. So I just told you that Tampa Bay has the 24th best pass rush this season. And the Bears, despite dealing with a lot of injuries on that offensive line, have the 13th best pass blocking unit. And both Josh Sitton, left guard Josh Sitton, and right guard Kyle Long both practiced today in limited participation, but they're back at practice and they might play this week. If they both play, it's a huge boost. I'm going right back to the well targeting this defense, and I love Cutler at 5,300.
Now, do you think Cutler – now, I want your opinion on this before I give my rebuttal. Do you think Cutler is a cash option or a GPP?
So that's the thing. It seems like Cutler should really never be a cash option, right? especially when you just consider the fact that Bears defense is not all there yet, one. Two, they could really get into one of those games where the game flow is just Jordan Howard running the entire game. If the line blocks like it did against the Vikings, you know, I mean, and Cutler still cashed in because of the touchdowns there, but he didn't have many yards. So I think for cash games, it's a little too risky, I would say. But at 5,300, I mean, it's not a terrible option in cash plays. I don't know. Do you disagree?
Well, that's my take on it. So I think Jay's in this weird category where you don't want to trust him in cash. I'm with you there 100%, but I don't know if he offers the upside you want in a tournament. I actually was going through his game logs with John Fox ever since John Fox came to Chicago. Jay Cutler's thrown for more than 280 yards just three times. Ooh. Like that doesn't give you very much upside. And on top of that, it's not just that though, it's the touchdowns too. He's had just one game with more than two touchdown passes. So for me, I don't know if the upside's there. I love the value. I love the value for 5,300. That's why I think he's a better cash play. I'm going to put that in quotes. But I don't think that there's any way that you could play him over Mariota. So usually we're talking about contrarian plays and things like that. I just don't know if Jay offers the upside. I think he caps out at maybe he may get to 280 and two touchdowns. Like that's not going to win you a tournament. That's why for me, he's more of a cash option, but I see where you're at with it. It's just a weird place.
No, I mean, I think I think you just brought the fire there because you just came prepared with a lot of information. You dug deep in the game log there. And you know what? You've completely changed my mind. I will not use him in tournaments now, but I am a bit of a value pig. I think that it's pretty much everything in life. And I will say that at 5,300, I got to get some exposure to him. So I'm now going to be leaning towards maybe cash games with that. I don't know. Even though I don't know how to fade Mario to 57, but that's a whole other story.
That's the weird part. That's the weird part. I know Brandon likes her some Alex Smith this week. So Brandon, who's a quarterback you don't like?
You know, I don't like a lot of these sleeper guys like at all, but I will say that, you know, I was encouraged by Russell Wilson last week. I don't love him traveling east and playing at Foxborough. And I think that there are going to be some people tempted by that rushing touchdown and him scoring over 200 or over 25 fantasy points in almost every single format last week. I think that yes, he's back in quotes, but not back at New England. I think that's a little bit over the top for me.
Yeah. And Dan, real quick, you don't even need to explain it. Just give us a DFS quarterback you don't like this week.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of people in on tournaments for Carson Palmer just because of the matchup with the 49ers off the bye week at home. And I think Carson Palmer's been the biggest trap of the season, and I'm not falling for it again.
That's the weird part with me, man. I kid you not, I was looking at Palmer today, and I was like, should he be consideration for my locks of the week? And the reason
he's
I said
so
that,
obvious.
Like, he really is. You look at the over-under the game, like, I think the Cardinals are, their implied team total is over 30 points this week. Like, so I looked at that and I'm like, oh wow, they're favored by 13 points. I'm like, I really want to play Carson Palmer, but you're playing David Johnson. Like, I don't really
100%.
Care. Yeah. I don't care what you have to do in your matchups this week. You play David Johnson. Like, he should be 100% owned against the 49ers. Like, there is no ifs, ands, or buts. Just play David Johnson and figure the rest out on its own. Like, I don't care if you have to put Mohamed Sanu as a wide receiver, just do it.
Yeah.
Speaking of running backs outside of David Johnson, because everybody knows that, Brandon, give us a running back that you like.
A bargain is Darren Sproles,
running
back for the Philadelphia Eagles. But listen to me, listen before you get all sassy pants over there. On FanDuel, he's the 46th highest priced running back.
No. Can't fade that.
It's so cheap. $5,100. 46th. You don't think he's going to be in the top 20 when he's the lead running back going up against Atlanta, who, by the way, gives up 60.8 receiving yards to opposing running backs, which is the league high. It's a perfect matchup for a running back who would be named Darren Sproles. It just all makes sense to me. It all makes sense to me. Now, do I love what's happening with that offense right now? No, I don't. But I will say that they're pricing Philadelphia like they're not doing what they're doing. But when it comes to fantasy production, they're just so cheap and they're outproducing their price tags. Jordan Matthews is the same way, actually, especially if you look at his last two games of production, it's actually gone up quite a bit. They're starting to get him much more involved. So, like I had said, you know, after that loss to Dallas, they are finally letting Carson Wentz, you know, run around a little bit. It's some of it's successful, some of it's not, but that's how you learn. That's how you become a better quarterback. So that's the good news. But Darren Sproles is very involved, and that price tag, I don't know how you ignore that.
Here's my issue.
Okay, 33rd.
Okay. I'm gonna need to state my case here for Darren Sproles and the fact that I don't like him. I know, like, back in, like, we have this stuck in our mind that Darren Sproles is the receiving back that he was in San Diego, that he was in New Orleans, but he's really not. He's not that anymore. There's been just one game this year where he's totaled more than 24 yards receiving. Like, I had to double check that with my own eyes, like, to think, really? Because, like, we all have it programmed in our mind that Darren Sproles, all he does is catch passes, and oh, and now he's getting 15 carries a game? I don't really believe that. The game that he actually went over 24 yards receiving was the one against Pittsburgh. And if you guys remember that game, it was this little swing pass. It was a broken play where Carson Wentz made a fantastic play. And it was, I think it was like a 60-yard receiving touchdown. That is the only game this year where Darren Sproles has gone over 15 PPR points. So for me, I'm not in love with Darren Sproles. I am, however. I love how you mentioned Jordan Matthews. I'm going to talk about him in a minute. But first, let's get over to Dan. Dan, give us a running back that you're playing maybe as a contrarian play and not, you know, on everybody's list.
Okay, maybe a contrarian play. So for a contrarian play for me, this is a tough one for me. I got a lot of weird plays I like this week. I'm going to say, as far as tournaments go, a guy I really like in tournaments is Paul Perkins on the New York Giants. He's 3,500 on DraftKings. He's 45 on FanDuel. He's super cheap. And last week, he saw his highest percentage of snaps of the season. It was only 34%, but the Giants got nothing going in that running game in the first half until they gave him basically an entire series, and he went for a 14- and 15-yard plays and back-to-back possessions before that weird Odell Beckham interception or whatever we want to call that. But Perkins is a guy to me that is clearly the only running back who has any chance of succeeding behind an offensive line that bad because – like just like he was at UCLA, he can make yards after contact. I mean, he was contacted behind the line of scrimmage a lot at UCLA, and it's the same thing with the Giants. It doesn't matter. They like to use him in the passing game too. He started the game off 7 carries for -1, and then he turned his stat line around, got almost up to 5 points on very limited touches. I think the deal with Perkins to me is that he's going to be, it's going to be a hot hand approach. They're looking for anything they can do to get that run game going. And if he starts off strong or if he starts off fast, I don't think they're going to go away from him for Rashad Jennings. I really don't think so. So I think there's so much upside there, especially against the Bengals defense that really hasn't played as well as it has in past years. They're injured in the secondary. They don't have that same edge rush. So to me, it seems like a really nice high upside play, high ceiling play. But obviously the floor is super low, so keep that in mind.
We've got a good dynamic here. And I say that because we all agree on a lot of things. And one thing I do know that a disagreement would have just came up with Brandon, because Brandon, we talked about this in the Waiver Wire show, and Brandon made the case that the only reason that Paul Perkins is not going to be able to take over as the three down back there is because he's not pass blocking, and that Rashad Jennings does pass block pretty well. So, but we're talking about a tournament option as a contrarian play, that a guy that's trending up in snaps. I like it. I do like it.
Well, it's very different to do a waiver wire show than a DFS show.
100%. 100%.
Because, like, yeah, of course, you know, like, he's a dart throw for a tournament. Gorgeous. But yeah. Do I want him on my season-long fantasy league and spend my waiver wire and fab money on him and think that he's going to be a starter every week? And
right.
Maybe, but we had other options. So, but yeah, no, I agree. I think, listen, they need something to happen in that backfield.
And let me say something. She's 100%. And let me just say this as somebody who covers this stuff like daily. She is 100% right. Jennings has been top 5 in pass blocking through the first half of the season. Yeah. Paul Perkins was a bad pass blocker at UCLA. And the only reason he didn't play more in the first half of the season is because of pass blocking. McAdoo said it. Mike Sullivan, the offensive coordinator, said it. But at the same time, they're also starting to now say he's starting to pick up things. Jennings says he's in the offensive line room now trying to figure out this. He's like, he's doing extra work. And remember, the thing with Perkins is he went to UCLA, so he got started all the way in late June. He missed all of rookie minicamp, all of OTAs. He got a late start, and now he's finally starting to pick things up. And to me, just from a talent standpoint, I'm a big believer in that talent wins out once they finally can get that whole pass blocking thing down, pass schemes down, know the protections, know what Eli wants to audible to. And so that's why, again, you're right. And I think we're both right here. So I think it's a good tournament play and a bad cash play. There we go.
Yes. No, I love it. I love it. That's what I'm saying. I think we're all in the same mindset. I think that's why this is kind of working right now. We're running out of time, unfortunately, but I want to run through some wide receivers real quick. I'm going to give you guys my pick. My pick for wide receiver of the week that I think is going to be a little bit under-owned in tournaments. I think he's a cash play. Kelvin Benjamin. Love him this week. Love him. The Chiefs, I will tell you this. The Chiefs have allowed just 4 touchdowns to tight ends over the last year and a half. So when you're looking at Greg Olsen, he's probably a fade to me this week. If he catches 1 touchdown, that's considered a good game against the Chiefs. So when you look at Cam Newton going up against a Chiefs defense that's allowed 13 passing touchdowns in the last 5 games, I'm going to lock in Cam Newton at home for 2, maybe 3 touchdowns. Kelvin Benjamin, this is the first time in his career where he's gone 4 games without a touchdown. I love Kelvin Benjamin. I think this could be a 2-touchdown game for him. That's my pick at the wide receiver position. I do like Jordan Matthews quite a bit, but we're running out of time. Brandon, give us a wide receiver that you are going to have in every single lineup.
Every single lineup?
Every single lineup.
Oh, my. I guess Antonio Brown, depending on Roethlisberger throughout the week. But I will say, though, pay attention to the injury report for the cornerbacks of the Denver Broncos. The Saints are playing at home. And if they continue to do this bizarre Calvin Harris Jr. or Chris Harris Jr. on the outside instead of in the slot, kind of bizarre defense that they had to pull out because Aqib Talib was hurt. And, you know, actually, so was Kayvon Webster. So if those two are both still out. Kayvon Webster did practice today, although he has a hamstring injury, so that goes in and out. Talib didn't practice again today, you guys, with that back injury. If he's out again, I think that some Saints are going to come through, and you know I love Michael Thomas.
I love Michael Thomas, and I understand that play. Me, the contrarian play in that game would be Breeze stacking him with Fleener. I don't know why. It's a weird feeling.
I would stack with Willie Snead if Chris Harris isn't going to be in the slot.
Exactly. If Chris Harris is going to be outside. Yeah, I actually said that earlier this week. I said that Willie Snead is going to go off one of these weeks, and he's going to be 2% owned. He's going to have 80 yards and 2 touchdowns. And it probably won't happen against Chris Harris, but it's going to happen soon. Dan, what about you? What's a wide receiver that you'll have in every lineup? And Antonio Brown, I love him this week, by the way, Brandon. But if I'm paying up for David Johnson, I can't seem to fit Antonio Brown in there too.
You got to get some scrubs in there like Alex Smith. That's what you got.
That's when you get Paul Perkins.
That's when you get a tournament play right there.
Yeah.
Paul Perkins.
Right. I love it.
But yeah, and I actually will start by saying I'm actually with Brandon on the Antonio Brown thing. I have a strong take on that game. I think the Steelers are going to whoop the Cowboys, but that's for another podcast. But my play I'm playing every week and every lineup is Alshon Jeffrey at 6,600 on DraftKings. I don't understand. They're not pricing him up. Again, amazing matchup. He has Jay Cutler back. That's pretty much all he needs. Last game when there was really no opportunity for him to do anything, Cutler's like, all right, we got one more drive. We're putting the pedal to the metal on offense. And then we're just going to sit it down and run the rest of the game. Alshon, you're getting your touchdown. And he fed him it. He fed him his touchdown. And I think it's a two-touchdown week for him this week.
Alshon should have had two touchdowns in that game. I watched the game. I'm a Bears guy. He hit him in the head. He hit him in the head.
Yeah, I saw that.
Oh, God.
However, I will say one of the people that's in all of my lineups, Zach Miller, because I think he's going to get one of those touchdowns that we're talking about. And again, that Tampa Bay defense, they've had I'm not kidding you. This is crazy. Tampa Bay has surrendered 3 touchdowns to tight ends in the last 4 games. And next, Zach Miller.
Yeah, no, I actually agree. I think Zach Miller is a fantastic play. I think you can consider him in cash. He's cheap. I think he's a solid tournament option, too. What about you, Dan? So we went there. I want to talk about tight end. You talked about Antonio Brown. You liked him. You liked Alshon Jeffrey. Tight end. Let's talk about tight end. Which my pick, by the way, I'm just going to get out of the way, Zach Ertz. Zach Ertz is a fantastic play this week. I love him against the Falcons there. Any tight end that has seen at least 2 targets against the Falcons has scored at least 8.8 DraftKings points. And when you're talking about a $3,700 salary, that's essentially like the minimum of what you're looking at. The only 2 players that didn't score that many points were against them, because they only saw 1 target combined, was Richard Rodgers and Jeff Hauserman from Denver, because that was when Virgil Green was hurt, John Phillips, whatever. They saw 1 target in that game. So the Falcons they're a dream matchup for any tight end, and Zach Ertz is catching up at the right time. Dan, what do you got in tight end?
I like Ertz, but I'm going to use Ertz in my play, because Ertz for me is my main piece of evidence for my play, and my play is Tyler Eifert. Entering last week, Zach Ertz had 150 yards total receiving on the season. He had 97 versus the Giants. This Giants defense is right back to where it used to be over the last few years, where they can't stop tight ends. They have issues at safety. They're down to their undrafted free agent rookie, Andrew Adams, who's actually played pretty well, but he hasn't done as well against tight ends. Same thing with the linebackers. They have never drafted a linebacker to cover tight ends. So they're back to that old Giants defense that can really get easily burned by tight ends. Ertz proved it last week. I think Eifert is just a money play this week.
I like it. And they've been tough on wide receivers this year in New York. So AJ Green might have his hands full a little bit. So yeah, I like the call. Brandon, who do you got tight end?
I don't think anyone's going to pay for him, but I love Greg Olsen as a contrarian play against Kansas City Chiefs.
That is definitely contrarian, and I would not – I'd like to wager on that. Can we do that?
I mean, he's only had 5 or more catches and 52 or more yards in every single game save 1, no matter the matchup. I guess so, if you want to wager on it. But I just think that tight end production is so shoddy that – I still feel like he is a solid, solid cash game play. And I think you can work him in, actually.
But if you're going to pay up that high, why not go to Jordan Reed? Like, so Greg Olsen.
Because I don't like Jordan Reed against Minnesota as much as I like Greg Olsen against Kansas City.
We got to figure out something, Brandon, you and I. Hold on. So actually, Brandon, hold on. We actually have 3 people in this show, so we could have a tiebreaker.
Oh, yeah, Dan.
Dan, you're the tiebreaker.
Jordan Reed or Greg Olsen?
I couldn't be more in with tags on this one. I wrote about Reed as my buy guy. The guy got 9 targets in his first, I'm sorry, 11 targets his first game back. He has more yards per out run than Olsen this season. He has that over last season. I think Reed's a more prominent option in that offense. I also just don't buy into this Panthers passing game this year. It hasn't looked that good. It really hasn't. They should have done much better against the Rams last week. I'm sorry. That's a pass defense that's beat up. So, you know what? I'm with tags.
Well, Brandon, I'm not throwing you under the bus. I love you.
I feel
terrible
saying that, because Brandon's my co-host. Brandon's
my buddy. Brandon's my buddy, but her and I always disagree. It's the funnest part of my week. I love arguing with Brandon.
How about the guy who was like, you need to be nice to her?
I know.
Shepherd call was money, and I was like, "That's what it was."
On Twitter, I got yelled at for arguing with Brandon.
Which is, we love each other. It's fine. I think, but again, if you're in first world problems deciding between Jordan Reed and Greg Olsen, then congratulations.
That's fair.
You know,
fair.
I mean, it's not like we were doing like, when you take Jordan Reed or Cameron Brate.
I think
then that would be done.
I think I'd rather than both of them, I'd rather just go down to Zach Ertz or Zach Miller. I think we're in the Zachs this week.
Zach Miller is probably in every lineup.
There you go. Okay. There you go. But then, guys, I hope you guys enjoyed me filling in here for more. Like I said, I know I'm not as funny. I probably argue more. No pun intended. But guys, you guys want to throw out your Twitter handles, Dan, Brandon, you guys want to throw out your Twitter handles so that everybody can follow you guys.
Yeah, sure. You can find me on Twitter at Dan Schneier at NFL. There's no space between that, even though I almost forgot my own Twitter handle, but there we go.
And I am at Brandon Her FFB, as in her fantasy football.
And I am at Mike Taglier NFL. We will be here throughout the week. We got shows everywhere. And guys, we're going to be starting to do a promotion on iTunes. If you guys go to iTunes and you leave a review on the show, make sure to leave your username, your PFF username in there, because we're going to be doing something, a giveaway throughout the, I think this entire month, we're going to be doing a giveaway where if you leave a review, one a month, we're going to give away a free PFF gold subscription. So make sure to go to iTunes, leave us a review. Let us know what you think. Tell me to stop yelling at Brandon. Tell Moore to come back.
No,
to the show.
That was sweet. That was sweet. Yeah,
do whatever you guys got to do. But thank you as always for stopping by. We appreciate it. Until next time, lights out.